And we're back. It's the Taylor Report, and we're getting a chance now to speak to Ted Schmidt. He's the author of The Season, when the 1967 Mimico Marauders dominated Toronto high school basketball. Ted Schmidt is a former editor of the Catholic New Times and a Toronto-based research teacher and writer. He's the author of four books: Shabbos Goy, A Catholic Boyhood on a Jewish Street in Protestant Toronto; Journeys to the Heart of Catholicism; Never Neutral, A Teaching Life; and I Was a Catholic Zionist. And Ted Schmidt is with us. Welcome to the show, Ted. It's good to see you.
Great to be back, Phil.
This is I get a kick out of this book because show me the person who actually doesn't have some interest in sports and or hasn't tried it and wanted to be an athlete. And I mean, I'm talking about men and women who wanted to be. And so we hear of a book about success at a game, and we say, maybe I could get a tip there. Maybe I'm going to learn something. And so I dipped into the book and finished it happily, and it discovered that it's a book about how to win, which I wanted to learn, of course, and about a bunch of wonderful people. But it's also a meditation about why people come together, how you keep them together, make a community, and how that might be a secret ingredient in your success as a coach. So let's start with that. Is that so?
Yeah, I always ask the question, what am I doing here? First of all, I was a teacher, and one of my mantras was, it's kind of a said in a facetious way, don't call me coach, I'm a teacher. I teach on baseball diamonds, I teach on hardwood floors, and latterly I teach on picket lines. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask the question, and you're right, I think it's a spiritual, it's a meditative book on why do people coach? What are they doing, particularly in a high school setting? So remember in the book I write about two guys whose names I changed, Smith and whatever his name was, who were deeply offended that the championship game didn't go off because of a teacher strike, and they said, we wasted 300 hours. I said, well, what do you mean? You know, I thought you wasted 300 hours. What about this precious time that you had with young people? Did that go for nothing? What are you doing out there? What kind of a teacher are you? So these were the questions. So many years I coached up at a basketball camp called Camp Olympia. And Dave Grace, who started the camp, when he started, he looked around for what he thought were the best coaches in Ontario to get the camp off to a good start. So he invited me up, and every year we came for 1 week, same week, 15 coaches, same week for many years. So I got to know the coach at York University, Bob Bain, and he said, I'm really interested in your approach to coaching. Would you come up and talk in my class about what you do? So I said, well, sure, I'll come up. And I really broke it down to two words, being a classics man, techne and logos. I says, every teacher has techne, which is the Greek word for art or skill. You know, we're going to teach you how to pick and roll, you know, the mechanics of a jump shot.
Listen closely.
Yeah, most of us can do that. But logos, that's the second part of the word technology. And that really is a Greek word meaning, what is the meaning of what you're doing? What is the inner disposition of the person that you're coaching? So I had a teacher when I studied theology in England who asked, what do you need to teach Sanskrit to Gopal? Do you need to know Sanskrit or do you need to know Gopal? Well, the answer as a teacher is you need to know both. You need to know the Sanskrit or the subject that you're teaching, but you better know Gopal, the student who's in front of you. So, you know, that was what I would
do. Was your teacher Donald Nichols?
Donald Nichol.
Yeah. That was your teacher?
That was the teacher.
Ted Schmidt was taught by Donald
Donald Nichol was a great philosopher.
And look him up. Great books.
So I thought I just tried to break it down. And I told a story there about a wonderful player I had the following year after this great team, Freddie Dimpson. And I had to use him because it was a small school. And Fred had two more years of junior. But he turned out to be such an incredible shooter and went on to play university ball. But I said, I knew the family. They were friends of mine. And during that season, Fred's a wonderful mother died. And I looked out into the audience, and there was a woman who was smiling. And, you know, as a speaker, I'm used to looking at audiences. And I said, my God, is that you, Lita? And it was Fred's sister. And she kind of had a smile, but a tear. I was talking about her mother, who had died. And she smiled. She said, keep going. She just loved it. My point being, these were people I knew, and I knew them really well. I was a single guy. I had time to get into people's lives. As you read the book, you found out how important the meals were that I had.
Breaking bread.
Yeah.
A very important matter.
Well, I think so. And I wasn't trying to tell.
Isn't this about neighbors and friends, et cetera? You have to break bread.
Yeah, you do. You have to sit down. And I remember at Mimico as a young teacher, it was a very old staff. And when I would go out and sit with students, one teacher called me a barbarian. Like, you don't do that. You know, but when you go and sit down with other people who are supposedly your inferiors, like students, I'm a teacher.
Yes.
You know, but I said, no. I want to break any idea that there's a separation between me and the students. So Friday night, as many of the students mentioned, we would go up to George's Spaghetti House, and we'd hardly ever talk about basketball.
By the way, this book is a great advertisement for That Spaghetti House. I've been thinking about it ever since I read the book.
Well, the meal was the important thing, because I realized at a meal something special happens. Mm. You know, people drop their guards, and they begin to speak to you.
Well, they can ask you stuff, right?
They can ask you stuff.
As you know, a kid in the classroom is terrified of being laughed at.
Yeah, that's right.
And that it takes something very some way to break the wall.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, and by the way, to me, the coaches, I played a lot of sports. The coach was one I sort of always hoped, here's a guy maybe I could talk to because he's more involved with you. He's yelling at you. He's pulling on you.
Yeah.
He's talking. But there's also time where you can say, do you want me to do this or that? And you can tell whether he's a human being who's going to respond to you.
That's right.
And later you go to him with, you have a problem.
You know, one of the things that really struck me when I asked the players on that team 50 years ago, now to write their memories. Mm-hmm. And they all mentioned this idea, as you know if you read the book, about the meal. And one wonderful player, Gary Balog, who wrote this. I'll never forget, you came to my house on February 22nd. I said, how the hell would he remember the date? But I kept a journal in those years. I went back, and there it was. I said, well, the only reason he would have mentioned it, and he mentioned the wonderful conversation I had with his parents. Here's the teacher coming to my house. This was unheard of.
Absolutely.
Well, I didn't think anything about it because I was a single guy, and I made myself available. Any students that would invite me to, you know, a dance or whatever, I'd go because I wanted to be available.
If this is amazing. You gave people, your players, J.D. Salinger, Franny and Zooey.
Yeah.
And then you would use, you're coaching them and you're saying, now you remember when the character in the book and the story says so-and-so. And they say, oh, yeah, now I get it. You know.
Well, they were always students, you know, and I give them books. And
Salinger, good for you.
Oh, sure. I mean,
there's a World War II veteran, by the way. People have to understand that, man.
That's right. No,
his
a big
daughter
fan.
Said, you know, why was he a loner and all that? And she said he kept – one thing she said, I'll never forget, he told me he couldn't get the smell of burning human flesh out of his nose.
Yeah. Salinger was very big in those years about what it was to be a teenager, you know, the catcher in the rye.
Yeah.
So I'd be handing books out all the time and to some of the players. But I think one of the things that changed me was I had gone to St. Mike's High School. Mm-hmm. And it was Hockey Haven. You know, this was the most famous school in Canada, turning out hockey players left, right, and center, and my classmate, Frank Mihovlich, et cetera. So I resented the way those players were treated. You know, there was a great a sports writer in New York named Stanley Woodward who always told young sports writers, don't god these people up. They're just human beings like you.
Yeah.
And most of the guys I knew at St. Mike's, they were very decent guys. But so then I had read this incredible book called Sports World by Robert Lipsyte. Lipsyte was this phenomenal New Yorker who wrote about Sports World. This is just a quote of his. "Sports World is a gross distortion of sports. It has limited the pleasure of play for most while concentrating on turning our best athletes into clowns. It has made the finish more important than the race." Mm-hmm. By the end of the 60s, Sports World wisdom had it that religion was a spectator sport, while professional and college athletic contests were the only events we held sacred. So Sports World, I resented. Sports World totally encased people inside that bubble. And I use the example, suppose my classmate Frank Mihalovich, St. Mike's, was seen in 1970 with me out at Bloor and Young speaking out against apartheid. Mm-hmm. People's head would explode because he was out of the context, you know. And I use the example of the young phenom Austin Matthews. What if he was seen in front of the Israeli consulate protesting against apartheid? 20 people couldn't handle it. They said, "What the hell is he doing there?"
Short answer: he wouldn't be seen again.
The coaches would say, "What the hell are you doing?" So many of these people never developed as human beings. You know, they were always gotted up by people looking for celebrity status.
You have a great quote. I think it's Martin Luther King saying that when you're silent about something, you begin to die.
That's right. And I never wanted to be silent. And when two of my friends who broke out of Sports World, and I love them. They were lovely people. Carl Brewer, who just said, "Well, there's more to life." I remember he wrote me when he broke away from Little Napoleon, Punch Imlach, because he couldn't take him. And he said, "Here are you teaching kids, and I'm chasing a rubber disc around you know, the rink." Yeah. And here's Carl, who didn't need to get involved in the broken down athletes, which he did, and he brought Eagleson to...
Listen, you're right. He did the world a big service.
Tremendous. He broke out of Sports
and
World.
And did that take guts?
It took a lot of guts. And my other friend, Pat Hannigan, who I had the honor of eulogizing, was an NHL hockey player. Three of them made the NHL. Pat had this conversion experience by going to Nicaragua and seeing the poverty, and came back and said to his wonderful wife, Lynn, "We have to change. There's more to life." Hmm. And they opened a refugee house in Fort Erie, people streaming across from Buffalo. And they were absolutely incredible. But he gave up the celebrity, he gave up the idea that, "Oh, yeah, I played in the NHL." Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a citizen. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a caring human being. Mm-hmm. So
we're talking to Ted Schmidt, and the book is The Season. You can go to info@bookband. If I get that right.
.com.
Info. Oh. Bookband.com to get a copy of the book, and it'll be distributed. I'm predicting it'll be at a different book list.
Yeah, it's now at the Beaches bookstore.
That's not fair. It shouldn't just be in the Beaches.
No,
it's a very competitive city.
We really haven't launched it yet. I'm waiting to go back to Mimico probably in November to bring it out.
Well, so we have to contrast. And I have to tell you, Ted, this tears me a little, because on the one hand, you point out this is fun. You made the game fun.
Yeah.
But you worked them to death.
Yeah.
But it was fun.
Yeah.
But also, you talk about how important that is spiritually. You're free when you're having fun. A person's mind is free. It's a creative moment to be that way. But you also run into the blizzard of capitalist sport, a monopoly sport. We read today the Calgary Flames said, "Give us all these things, or we will leave your city." And, you know, I mean, this is brutal.
So
in a sense, you seem to say almost, I think I should walk away from sport, but we don't want you to do that. You're a great coach. But also, you noticed how much fun sport is.
Well, you needed to demand.
You have to resell me on the sport.
We only had seven players, so they had to be in the best shape
possible. By the way, does Mimico play basketball now?
I think so, but there's no Mimico High School. It's gone. Yeah. There's only one school on the Lakeshore. But we had to be very disciplined because we only had seven players. They never saw full court press They never saw this in Toronto.
You do read to me like Johnny Wooden.
Well, it was fun.
Those guys have to be able to run. The style of basketball you played.
That's right.
You have to be in condition because the fourth quarter is when it's going to be decided.
And they were very disciplined players. I asked a lot of them, and it was fun watching them. You know, I used to laugh. It was just great, and I'd made friends with kids on the other team.
Some of them write in this book. Some very nice. You have some very nice little segments written by your former players.
Well, it wouldn't be a book without the six players. One died that made the team up. I said, "It's your book. Tell me what you remember 50 years ago." But it's also a hymn to this wonderful working class community of Mimico that was really looked down upon. By North Etobicoke, et cetera, you know, because it was the industrial heart of Canada, and most of the kids I taught, their parents, you know, worked in factories, et cetera. But it was an extraordinary place to teach. I would have stayed there, not gone into the Catholic system, had there been work for me as a guidance counselor. But Vatican II hit, and I said, well, maybe I should be over in the Catholic system.
Well, you're a reformer. I really liked your thinking, and I know you've gone after the subject, and I want our listeners to hear this point. Today's page one, they're talking about concussions. You said get rid of football.
Yeah, and I coached one year with the Argonaut player who was a place kicker and was traded out west for Jackie Parker, Bill Mitchell. Bill Mitchell was a good friend of mine. We coached together.
Well, I'm glad we got Jackie Parker.
Yeah, I got sick of watching 120-pound kids in junior, you know, where their neck's not formed, go up against 180-pound kids.
That's dangerous.
And then when I went to Neil McNeil High School, I said, this game is for savages. And by by 1979, I wrote
an article. That's not good salesmanship. No, I get your point.
I wrote, it's time for Catholic schools to get out of football. I said, here we are talking about a nonviolent hero, Jesus. And I says, we're asking people to crush people out there.
Yes.
And it was just too violent. And, I got some nice hate letters from all over the province. But it turned out, I guess I was there before everybody else because football's dying of its own up here. Parents are not allowing their kids to go in because we know what happens when, you know, the immovable object meets the et cetera, et cetera.
They certainly, if we have to face it, this has been going on. I can recall when everybody agreed at one time they were going to get rid of, it was Kefauver was his name, a man from Kentucky, a senator.
Yes, this Kefauver.
He was going to get rid of boxing.
Oh, and, we should
and everybody said, of course. But then you said, well, listen, in football you can get hit a lot harder.
Oh, that's right.
And a neck, it'll break your neck.
Yeah, so it's dying. I was going to go up to my old school board, the Catholic board, and say, you should be canning every team that has, but it's dying. Mm-hmm. I think there's only about four or five schools that have it anymore because of immigration. They're all playing soccer. They're playing rugby. Okay, you can get hurt in rugby, but there's no head-on tackling with a helmet like you have.
Yes.
You can't make football safe.
A high-speed collision.
You cannot make football safe.
Yeah.
So luckily I got out of it, and then...
Hey, by the way, you broke his jaw. I can tell our listeners little detail.
Well, don't bring that up. When I played at university, right here at the University of Toronto, I broke my jaw. That had nothing to do with it. I mean, I was silly 20-year-old
kid.
Yeah,
you just put your head where it shouldn't have been,
the
guy kicked you.
I got kicked there, but no, I was a big football fan. But then you begin to think about what are you doing? What is life about?
Yeah, but play. I mean, I got to keep coming back. You sell me on play at the beginning of this of the book.
Yeah, I talk about play,
and you do talk about how important it is that somehow, even for teaching, right? That you're not in a frightened environment or one where you're constricted and waiting for the word to come down.
Right.
But there's just that space
where
you're working on something together.
Right.
And it becomes enjoyable.
Whether it's basketball
or
in the class.
Yeah.
So I used the Dutch theorist Johan Huizinga, who talked about play. I mean, he had brilliant ideas about what play is, that life is really meaningless unless you learn how to play.
Huizinga, is that?
Huizinga, yeah. H-U-I-Z-E-N-G-A.
I was waiting for you to come in so that I could hear it pronounced properly.
Yeah.
Homo Ludens.
Oh, yeah, and he wrote the book Man the Player. Homo Ludens, from my Latin, you know, man essentially should learn to play. We had so much fun. And when Don Shabib came to do that movie on our team that you can still see on YouTube.
This is Don Shapiro going down going the road.
Going down the right. Just plug in Mimico Basketball. You see this team 50 years ago. And I have only seen that play a movie once or twice, but I looked and said the fun that we would have because at the end, since we only had eight players, I had to dress in scrimmage with them. Mm-hmm. And I would mock the hell out of them, you know. And by the time they got to senior, they were much better players than I was. But we had a lot of fun. And it was great to watch these guys, you know, listen to my barking out Cato or Brutus, my Latin names for the different presses.
Yeah, and they remember this.
Well, they all remembered them, eh? Well, we had the athletes to do it.
You come from a Latin-trained family.
Yes, I did. My mother was a Latin teacher, and I was a classics teacher. So I used that.
You don't
that.
Expect to find you guys on the basketball court. No, I'm not surprised you did well.
No, you wouldn't expect that. But
but you quote Nietzsche saying that man is at his best when he's playing. I mean, when he can be what he was happy, like as a child.
At play.
That's when he's best.
Yeah, yeah. Man's maturity, you know, to get back to when he was a child at play. We had so much fun. It was never a problem with this team. I just couldn't believe we kept winning. And you'd enjoy it, and it was just
marvelous. This is Ted Schmidt. I want to, before we go further, I remind you, the book is The Season, Ted Schmidt, and info@bookband.com to get a copy.
It's only $15, and they'll send it right to your door.
It's great. It's got a picture of Ted stealing a basketball net on the front.
Yeah,
which is
it's a really tournament.
Now, talk about corrupting youth, Socrates. This is how you do it. they're actually helping their coach steal a net.
Well, you did that.
And a trophy.
You cut the net down. I didn't know this tradition, but they all raised me
up.
They
picked you up.
They gave me scissors, and I still have parts of the net.
Yeah. And this is a coach who still to this day is in close touch with his champions.
Well, Don Crocker and Larry Trafford, two of my great guards, said to me, "Hey, Ted," because they were still good friends. It's 50 years ago that we should get together. I said, yeah, like I don't live in the past. But I said, and Donnie quoted Fred Shero. It was a beautiful quote. You win tonight, the old hockey coach, Fred Shero, you win tonight and you walk with these people the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. There was a relationship there that was profound. Yes. It was just incredible, the friendship. Well, you know, you win 45 games, you lose one. Yeah. We were just an extraordinary team, you know.
By the way, I get you to comment on the Kaepernick phenomenon. You must find this an act of considerable political significance. I mean, a man who foregoes great money and takes a stand. And it's like a ripple. A lot of black athletes and white athletes are starting to take a knee or to turn their change.
He broke out of sports world like Carlos and Smith in 1968. We're citizens. Before we're athletes, you know, and then when I left Mimico, I became a lot more political. You know, I used to take my basketball team at Neil down to protest with Dan Heap against the grape strike, you know, for Cesar Chavez. I said, we got better things to do than coach basketball today.
But that would make them closer. I mean, the beauty of it is you're not doing anything insidious, but you actually are making them feel more grounded. They're not just a bunch of kids playing a game.
Well, it was relationships. People grow through sport. Sport has a lot to offer people, the dedication.
That's what I wanted to hear you say.
The commitment. But sports world, you can forego that. Sports, wonderful. We can all enjoy
sports. Sports business world.
Yeah.
Corporate sport.
Absolutely.
Well, we've been talking to the great Ted Schmidt. The book is The Season. And go to infobookband.com.
That's right. And they'll send it to you, $15.
$15. And, well, boy, it's been a pleasure. We've got to have you come back. There's a bunch of other things about sport we've got to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's been great.
So thanks very much. And I think we got, what's his name, Johnny?
Johnny Fogarty.
Johnny Fogarty.